Hey yo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, and I am super happy today to be joined by the lead singer and the rhythm guitarist for Art of Shock. He is Art Gizar. Art, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Hey, no problem. It's great to have you on the show to talk about. Well, let's see now. We got lots to talk about. So, of course, there's the King Diamond cover of No Presents for Christmas. And then, of course, you have your Dark Angelus album, which came out earlier this year. So, really great stuff. Why don't we start with No Presents for Christmas?
Okay. Yeah, well, it's a song that we recorded during the sessions for Dark Angelus, actually. You know, for a project that never happened, yeah? we got lucky because, you know, it's been a slow year. Lots of terrible things have happened to everyone, right? And we got lucky that we had that little song there, you know, a little special product there to promote.
Yeah, so what then was it that drew you to the song in and of itself?
And to begin with, we were big fans, yeah. You know? And we always wanted to do that song. It's so funny, you know? It's so cool. It's kind of the few rock and roll Christmas songs that are actually good, you know? Who else? Like AC/DC, very few bands have actually pulled it off, right?
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, King is awesome. I mean, how can you not love King? So
yeah, in general, and that song is just hilarious. It's amazing.
Yes. Well, and even
every band wants to play it at some point.
Yeah, I mean, and your video. I mean, I love the way that you've got the video, like the animated, especially like the skeleton with the twirling head and the Tom and Jerry bit, you know, with the cat and mouse. It's a lot of fun. So I think that I appreciate that you take it like that as well.
Yeah, we wanted to keep it there. Like it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek song, right? It's comedic. Mm-hmm. So we keep that vibe there for sure.
So now, of course, going back into the album, you cover Lust for Life on there as well. What is it about? I guess maybe not so much Lust for Life. I mean, again, another great song. But what is it about doing some covers that kind of, you know, draws you in and makes you want to include those in your projects?
Well, like including them is different than, you know, trying them with the band.
Because right.
We're fans of other bands, right? And we want sometimes play their songs. Once in a while, somebody really likes something, you know, listen, we have to do that one. All right. Why not? You know, we love lots of songs. We're like, but in the end, it's like it has to be the whole band and probably also management and the label saying, yeah, that one.
Yeah, because I guess, like, normally when you would be on tour, like, is it the kind of case where you're listening to all these bands and maybe you would be out on the road and say, oh, we should try playing that one or we should try playing that one?
All the time. It's mostly personal, you know, it's just for the band, you know?
Yeah.
Jam sessions. And you play all the songs that you feel like, you know, we could probably do something with that. We would have a lot of fun, you know, recreating that. And then sometimes you really like one, like Lust for Life, you know? And it's one that a lot of metal bands do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some more punk bands that cover that song than metal bands. So that was interesting, too.
Yeah. Well, and that leads me to the question of how do you Art of Shock a cover?
Well, I mean, if you notice, like, we have, like, different arrangements, right?
Yeah.
It's because that's what suits our playing. If we were playing the same thing, I don't think we could pull it off, you know? we need to be honest.
Yeah.
Actually.
Well, and one of the things that I appreciate about your covers is that you aren't playing it, you know, straight and true to the original. Because if everybody just played covers that were straight and true to the original, well, we might as well just listen to the original. So it's great when you're able to bring your own take and kind of put your own spin on that.
Yeah, I love that. I also think that there's some people that can pull it off. Because sometimes you just want to hear a certain singer singing.
That's totally fair, right? Yep.
The same song. And some people can do it really well, right? But most of the time that you have to, you know, do it the way you do it, basically.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you know, looking back on this year, it's been such a hard time for so many bands. I mean, how is it that you guys are kind of staying sane in the current, you know, I guess, state of the world?
I mean, it was really funny because, you know, the album dropped on the week when the lockdown started. And that was the week.
Yay!
We started a tour with Sepultura and Sacred Reich and Crowbar. So, yeah, it was like, at the moment, I was like, okay, you know, just take it, right? Adapt. Whatever. But then suddenly, after a month or two, you start to realize that there's something in the back of your brain. You know, your mental health starts to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
There is some sort of a little depression or sadness or whatever, you know, you're really bummed. And then, you know, what did it for me? I started writing a lot. Like, I know lots of other musicians that did that, but also lots of other musicians that are really depressed right now. And they cannot even touch their guitars, you know?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, even just as, you know, on the show, we hear a lot of that about the dichotomy of the people who are throwing themselves into the music and then some people who are just watching a whole lot of TV. And, you know, and it's so weird. And now, especially with Christmas coming up, I mean, we're supposed to be, you know, the idea would be to spend time with our family and do that kind of thing. But now even that's questionable to its own degree. So I think it's, you know, it's really interesting, and it's nice when we can have music still to kind of draw everybody together.
Oh yeah. And also as a personal thing, because originally you do this because you love it, right?
Yeah.
And that, like, basically saved most of us at some point. And then you still have that. You just have to realize that you still have that thing, you know? Because yeah, I know a lot of people that are just drinking and watching TV, right? And cannot get around of like just like trying to start a song, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That's really bad. I think I got lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude, I'm going to go play guitar, you know? I have to.
Yeah. So then how is it that, with the rest of the band, how are you kind of situated? I mean, you're with your brother, I assume, on a regular basis. Are you able to kind of get together as a band a little bit?
Oh, yeah, actually, it's funny because Nick, Adrian, and I live together. Only Bryce lives somewhere else. We try to get together at least once a week.
Right.
So, yeah, it's different, right? But still, you know, like we're very close. So the band hasn't suffered in our internal relationship.
Yeah, well, and that's great. I mean, so then I guess as you're writing songs, like, are you kind of preparing for the next album? And like, what are some of the lessons? I mean, of course, signing with Century Media and then working through the songwriting process to put out Dark Angelus, like, what are the kind of lessons that you learned from writing that one that you're actually using now?
I mean, probably it was such an amazing process. I learned a lot of things, but I cannot, you know, pinpoint like one thing that I started doing. But probably one is that I learned how to record myself better.
Mm.
You know, I learned how to use some plugins and, you know, Pro Tools a little bit, you know, because, you know, I used to demo, you know, in the little fucking cassette tape or the cell phone, you know, like the shitty demos, you know, and now, actually, that process taught me how to start recording things that sound like songs now, right? The ideas sound like songs.
No, and I think that those kind of things are so important. You know, do you keep a lot of those ideas? Like, how many ideas kind of form an Art of Shock song? Like, I guess, do you have lots of leftover material that you then kind of go through when you're looking at the album, that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, like a... What happened too, you know, for my mental health, it's like I'm not going to use any of the leftovers, you know?
Oh, okay.
I feel bad about, like, probably because of the situation, you know? It was like, no, like, I don't want to work on those old songs that I didn't finish, right? I had to start from zero. So, you know, I started first riffing and then constructing little songs. And I ended up with, like, I think I have, like, 45 ideas right now.
Wow.
That sound like songs, actually.
So then tell me about your process. Like, is it you that are that's doing like the demo, so to speak, where it's like writing the lyrics, writing the general music, and then how do you bring that to the band, I guess?
Except, so I start, right? I get something that sounds like a song, and then I send the songs to the band, and we've never done this like long distance, but we're doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody getting their little recording rigs in and everything, so we can work long distance, even with a guitar player, because Nick cannot be here all the time, you know, even if we live together. My brother cannot be here all the time. But I don't want him to be here. Sometimes I want to be alone. And,
yeah.
It's both bad, actually. Then I send him the things. You think about it. You know, you tell me what you think. You know, record from some parts over that stuff.
Well, I think there is such a, you know, it's kind of healthy in some ways to be able to kind of sit alone and be kind of with yourself and with your thoughts. And then when you hear something, be able to kind of process that without somebody either sitting over top of you or maybe even projecting their own expectations onto your listening experience.
It's a different way. You know, there's many ways of writing, right? We've never done this like this, you know, like because it feels better to have a band, you know?
Yeah.
And things like sometimes happen quicker, but sometimes they don't. So yeah, it has its pros and it has its cons, right? It's just different. It's a different way of writing. I think everybody's doing the same thing right now, and the people that's used to, you know, to create the songs with the band, now they have to do it by themselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm assuming that given the choice, you would rather have the entire band around and kind of, you know, just work everything out as a band in the same space.
Exactly. You know, old school. Like, you come up with a little riff, record it on your cell phone, and show it to the guys, you know, and start jamming, you know?
Yeah.
Until you feel it.
I mean, it's one of the things that I like about your sound as well, is that it has enough of that old school feel, but also there's, you know, enough nods to kind of, you know, the newer sounds and you know, giving a wide range of sounds. And I think that, you know, that's kind of what I noticed as I was listening to the album. And I think Glasgow Smile is probably my favorite song on the album.
Yeah, I like that song. It was hard at first. The guys from the band didn't like it.
Oh, okay.
They thought the chorus was a little too happy. But by playing it together, we modified it, you know, to hide the majory stuff. Make it more darker and heavier, right?
Now, is that the kind of thing? So, I mean, Dark Angels, of course, very, you know, very dark sentiments and that kind of thing. Now, as you write for something new, is it the same kind of dark sentiments that you're going for? Or are you kind of looking to expand, I mean, and go in different directions?
I'm just letting it happen, you know?
Yeah.
That's another thing that I realized. Just let whatever happens, happens, you know? For now, we're not in a rush. It's not that we have to deliver the album in a couple of months, right?
Yeah.
Let's just let it happen. You know, relax and just try different things and have fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, of course, because it's so different, because normally, I guess, you'd be out on tour and constantly trying to, you know, just find new shows to be on and all the and the tours and that kind of thing. So the forced, you know, being forced to stay home. Now, when you're on tour, do you find that you kind of write as much?
No, not at all. We do take at least we try to jam acoustically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We can't. I'm thinking about, like, but it's so hard, you know, to take your own little recording rig. I know a lot of people that does that. But it's really, I know a lot, most people find it really difficult, you know, to actually find some time to sit with the Pro Tools and
yeah.
Yes. And it is very difficult. I guess you just have to get used to it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, one of the things that I'm fascinated about is the whole, like, earlier part of your career coming through the Sunset Strip, because, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Sunset Strip, especially back in the 80s and early 90s. So then, what was it like for you guys coming up in, like, the early, you know, like late or early 2010s, I guess, and kind of pushing through the Sunset Strip at that point?
It was really cool, actually. You know, the Sunset Strip still had a scene, you know, like, now most of the venues have closed. You know, it's pretty dead now, which is really sad.
Mm-hmm.
But we moved to LA in a time where most of the clubs were still open, you know, and doing pretty well. And the first thing that happened is, like, when we moved to LA, my brother and I, we didn't have instruments or practice space or anything, and we had like three songs. And I don't know how my brother, I met someone and booked a gig at the Whiskey a Go Go. With no band, with no instruments, no practice space, like three songs, dude. And 2 weeks in advance, also, dude. So The funny thing is that we were living at a pretty cool hostel with like 30 people from all over the world, right? At that moment. So some dude there told us, I can play bass, you know. You play a little bass, I can help you. Then another guy moved in and he happens to be a guitar player, right? He's like, holy shit, we have the band. Immediately we went to Guitar Center, got the whole thing, rented a practice space. We got lucky because they were hard to get in LA.
Wow.
And I mean, we pulled it off.
Yeah.
Probably sucked, but it felt good to actually be able to to make and play 30 minutes of music, right?
How did you manage to fill out the set? I mean, three songs obviously is not going to fill 30.
And then all the guitar players that we met had some ideas, you know, so really fast put together a little set.
I mean, it must have been such a, you know, such a great... It sounds like a great experience just from the way you're telling me about it. But, like, what does that do to a band? Like, how much did it kind of gel you? And, well, especially in your brother, obviously, would have a great relationship. But, like, how much does it gel a band? And how much does it gel your desire and passion to work towards this as a career?
But I guess, like, I mean, it's both the happy and the hard situations, right? Whenever you put yourself in a really heavy situations, only two things can happen, right? You get closer together or you split. Mm-hmm. And I got lucky, at least my brother and I, you know, because we've had lineup changes.
Yeah.
So that kind of solidified that we're doing this and we're going to do it, you know,
mm-hmm.
no matter what. If we can pull that off, we can just keep going, you know. Nothing's going to hurt as much as it, which was a lie at the moment, right?
Yeah. Now then, especially after the lineup changes, like, how did you kind of know when you'd found the right people to solidify the Art of Shock lineup?
Yeah, that's weird. And I always read about it, right? Like musicians explaining, we just felt it, yeah. Which is such a weird thing, right? And that's what happened when Nick came to jam with us. We just felt it, you know, like we play very well together.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of have kind of the same pace, very frenetic, you know, like that. We do this really well together. It obviously changed the sound too a lot. I think we became more of ourselves.
Right.
You have a sense of freedom when you're playing with the right people, I guess. I guess that's the whole mystique, right? The thing that you cannot really explain. Something happened and you mm-hmm. felt it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because I think it's really interesting because I think I've noticed with bands, it's not necessarily that you need the best players, it's that you need the right players.
Mm-hmm, exactly. You need a group of people that feels good together, you know?
Yeah. And now, is it, like, without, when you're on tour, like, how is it that you get along? Like, do you actually get along really well as a whole? Like, is there, like, practical jokes, that kind of thing, along the way?
Oh, all the time, you know, like all bands have their internal humor. I know some bands that don't, they're fighting all the time, but I mean, most bands, at least, you know, they try to joke around and, you know, have a good time here and there and try to avoid the person you don't get along with. We don't have that problem yet. I mean, like probably bands that have been touring for a decade start having those types of problems, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny and it's tragic, but I mean, at the same time, I think it comes down to that same whole, like, you know, that person is the right person in the band musically, but, you know, sometimes I guess they're tough to work with on a human perspective, but.
And you're living with them. It's like, you know, like everybody says, like being yeah. married to another three guys, because you live with them, everything, you share every single experience, you eat the same stuff, you know, you sleep mm-hmm. in the same. So, yeah.
So let's see. I mean, we're talking about touring. So then, you know, what are some of your favorite touring experiences that you've had so far as a band?
Oh, dude, once we did a Warped Tour, and it was so intense. It was fun and terrible at the same time. You know, like so excruciating, dude. The hardest tour ever, dude. But I think if you can pull that off, every other tour feels like nothing.
Well, I guess it must be great to get those kind of things out of the way earlier in your career, to be able to have these hard experiences and to kind of, you know, really like, well, it can only go up from here, right?
Exactly. We also, you know, on that Warped Tour, it was really fun because we were also the party band. We had to set up parties every night for the whole tour.
Oh, wow.
500 people, you know. So we were cooking, we were grilling every single night, you know, giving them refreshments and beers and whatever, you know. We were working for tips, you know. We weren't selling anything. But, you know, lots of the bands understand that they helped us out too, which was good. But the amount of work, the workload was absolutely terrible, you know. We will be the first band to get to the venue and the last one to leave. Oh, jeez.
But I guess, you know, again, you survived it, and I'm sure it made you all a lot stronger for it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now, of course, I mean, you talk about the tour that you're missing now. Is that one rescheduled? Do you think that you'll have a chance to go out with that one again?
Well, I'm crossing my fingers. Like everybody else is, you know. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody even knows if they're going to be able to pull off the festivals in the summer. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so weird because I see that there's bands that have their shows starting to be rescheduled. I mean, whether it's into March or something, and that's the crazy thing. I mean, I think we're all hoping that there'll be the start of a return to normalcy, but I don't know if we'll see it immediately. That's the unfortunate part.
It seems like really, I love when I see the announcements of the festivals, right? All the European festivals are announcing, and you're like, yeah, maybe we're going to be back next year. But we still don't know. Like, it seems like, you know, anything can happen, you know, with how the vaccines roll out, you know,
mm-hmm.
how long it takes for everybody to get vaccinated, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then I read, of course, your video, Dark Angelus. I read that you happened to finish recording that one and shooting that one just before everything kind of went crazy.
Oh, yeah. That was at the last possible second, literally. And took a long time. Don't remember why, the circumstances. But literally, we made that video like a week before the tour was supposed to start. Wow. And the album was supposed to drop on the first week of the tour. Perfect fucking timing, right?
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, it was at the moment, I didn't feel it that hard, you know, but later on, I started to realize, yeah, it did hit me.
Mm-hmm. So then, you know, for you right now, like, who's on your pandemic playlist?
Oh, dude, it's been crazy and amazing. Been listening to the Greek singers, Argentinian singers, you know, like all kinds of musical, also metal, you know, like sometimes I get into my death metal playlist moments and thrash metal. You know? But I have been discovering and listening to a lot of music that I haven't listened to in many years that I actually like a lot, you know, like listening to opera.
Mm.
I have to actually sit down and relax and listen to a complete opera.
Wow. Yeah,
listen to the aria, right? To the aria, to the best arias. But to listen to a whole piece, that requires time. And sometimes, like obviously, when you get busy as an adult, right?
Yeah.
You rarely have time to actually listen to an opera. And that's a really positive thing that happened, actually.
Yeah, I like that concept. And I know that for me, it's done a lot of the same kind of thing. I mean, obviously, we're actually wound up doing more interviews because nobody's on tour. So it's easy to do a lot of interviews. But it's great because there's been so much ability to kind of hear new things and explore. And so I guess if there's one takeaway, I hope that everybody can actually get the chance to explore and hear the new music and really kind of expand their musical horizons.
I think that's the positive side of the streaming platforms. There's a very negative side, right? But the positive side is like opening people's minds, you know, because they have everything.
Mm-hmm.
They own every other album that was ever released in history, right?
Yeah, pretty close.
they can discover more and say, oh, I fucking, by mistake, heard this violin player, right? And I love it. We're talking about like a punk rock kid that might start making a violin player.
Yeah.
Because they had time to sit down and listen to all the kinds of music.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, and it's great. And I think, so now, do you think that being able to hear that maybe listening to some of those new styles of music or kind of going back, will that influence either A, your singing or B, your songwriting?
Hopefully yes, and hopefully not. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's like a I actually stop, and many people does that. You know, you stop listening to music when you're writing.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the subconscious factor.
Yeah.
And you try to avoid that, especially when you're actually listening to hundreds of artists, right? But it's impossible. If you're listening to 5 thrash bands, it's probably, you know, you're going to notice.
Yeah.
You're listening all across the board to hundreds of artists, like, it's going to be hard. You're not going to notice if you're lifting something up.
Now, I guess one of the questions that I have too is, how do you know when your vocal performance is right on the song?
I mean, I have my my personal taste, right? But also, like, I also always listen to the band, to the producer, and to my vocal coach, you know? And it's important to listen to them. Like, right now, like, it's probably it's too intense or not intense enough, you know? Or it's too high.
Mm-hmm. How long?
I take notes and then I try different things.
Oh, yeah. Okay. How long have you been working with a vocal coach?
Well, about 2 years now.
Do you find, I mean, I assume it helps you, but, like, in what ways do you think that the vocal coach does help you?
They basically set you free. Well, at least my teacher, Melissa Cross, I mean, she's very famous. She's, like, the biggest metal vocal coach in the world. And she teaches you how to use your instrument in an efficient way, but also how to let go of all the bullshit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think it's interesting. I mean, hearing so many stories about people when they start out and they don't use a coach, and then they actually wind up losing or kind of breaking their voices along the way, and then have to almost relearn how to sing. And usually, like in a lot of cases, I think they come back stronger because suddenly you do learn how to use your voice, your instrument, and I think it's an amazing thing.
But you know,
probably everybody should use them.
When they hurt themselves, they actually hire a coach. Most of them.
So that, happens. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, what forced you to, like, what was the moment that forced you to choose to work with the coach?
I mean, it didn't force me, but I wanted to get better.
Okay.
You know, for the first album with Century Media, I wanted to feel freer, you know, and wanted to be able to create more textures. And put more layers
mm-hmm.
on the music. That was it.
Well, I guess, you know, being able to work with Century Media, which is obviously awesome, like, I guess the desire as a band is to kind of pull out all the stops and make it the best work that you can humanly produce.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, that's always the idea, right? Even if you're not with any label, right? If you're by yourself in your room, you want to make your any artist like a... I mean, that's why, like, I respect, you know, people that create things in general. I know there's a lot of people, oh, that's, like, you know, subpar or mediocre, blah, blah, blah. I don't think like that. If somebody does something that comes from their heart, they're usually doing the best that they can with the tools that they have at the moment, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely right.
We all do. We all try to do the best that we can with the tools that we have at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Art... I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I know that I'm running out of time here, but I want to give you the chance to tell everybody where they can find Art of Shock, and I know, like, buy some merchandise, get the album, all that stuff, help support you guys, especially in this time.
Well, basically, everything is on artofshock.com, but, you know, you can find us on Facebook or Instagram, like, every single thing that you can think about with Art of Shock. It's the same thing. But, you know, we have our main hub, the homepage, which most people don't go to anymore. Like to go, like, you can go to Facebook, Art of Shock, or Instagram, and you'll find, you know, links to merch and all the new songs and news and funny stuff, you know, stupid things that we do.
And it's good to do some funny, stupid stuff here and there. That's for sure. Well, I've enjoyed talking to you a lot. I really enjoyed the album, and I urge everybody to go out and have a listen to Dark Angelus. Certainly want everybody to listen to No Presents for Christmas, because, you know, King Diamond, that's a, you know, what a great pedigree. And again, Art Gizar, thank you so much for stopping by and being on the show, and all the best in the future.
Thank you, brother. Thanks.
Awesome.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk again.
Bye.
Bye now.